Hey, this is Jeff Ratcliffe here. Let's talk about the value in daily fantasy for a minute. The big prizes, yeah, they're attractive, but you have to finish in the top 2% out of thousands of experts to win any real money. So even on your best day, you still feel like you're losing. Now you can play something better. Stat Hero. Stat Hero is a house-based game that combines the best of daily fantasy and survivor pools. Each Stat Hero contest lasts multiple days, but requires only one entry fee, so your money lasts longer. Yes, you can play multiple days with only one entry fee. Stat Hero gives you a smaller contest and more chances to win, and no more competing with sharks or experts ever, because your only competition is Stat Hero itself. Survive the game and download Stat Hero today and see how the face of daily fantasy has changed. Finally, a game designed for the rest of us. Stat Hero now open for NFL and NBA. For more information, please visit stathero.com.
You kidding me? Playoffs?
What is up? It's the Pro Football Focus Fantasy Podcast. My name is Jeff Rackle, but it's Wednesday, January 22nd, and we are in a sort of dead zone. Can only talk so much about the Super Bowl. I feel like I learn that every year. But you can only talk so much about the Super Bowl. So let's start the show today by talking a little bit about the Super Bowl. Of course, we have some news to get to, including Antonio Brown. Another one. Man. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the thing I teased the other day about overachievers. And we're going to look at rushing touchdowns. But let's talk about the Super Bowl because, hey, it does look like Tevin Coleman is actually going to play. I did not expect this initially, but Kyle Shanahan saying it was a dislocated shoulder that Coleman suffered there in the conference championship game. And hey, this looked a lot worse than a dislocated shoulder. Of course, that can be a very painful injury. Anybody who suffered one will certainly attest to that. But it looked like he did something to his wrist or his forearm or something along those lines, and that's not the case. So that complicates things just a little bit, because to open up that conference championship game, they were splitting series between Coleman and Mostert. So I don't know if Raheem Mostert is necessarily a slam dunk this go-round, but we'll have more analysis on that. I'm going to save the analysis for next week because, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. Honestly, not much is going to change between now and then anyway. So we'll do the whole profile of the entire game. We'll break down player props. We'll break down DFS, one and done. That's a really tough one. Play everybody you have left, but we'll still talk about it anyway. I did want to briefly mention the lines here. Right now, not much movement. We saw half point movement on the spread, open at 1.5, down to 1 for Kansas City. PFF Green Line currently has this at -0.6 for Kansas City. In other words, it's going to be a close game. I mean, there's no two ways about it. So far this season, both teams doing well against the spread. Looks like, yeah, San Francisco's 11-6 versus the spread. KC 12-5-1. So both teams pretty effective there. This is going to be a tricky one. I hope we'll get some movement for next week. If this thing stays static, it's going to be a tricky play. I mean, if you said, Jeff, you have to make a play and you can only make one play, I'm going to take Kansas City because I think they win by more than a point. I think it's close, but I think they win by a field goal, give or take, right in that range. So I like Kansas City here, but that is not analysis. That is just me saying, speaking out loud, knowing the league that as well as I know the league. But at this point, I'm not willing to make a call based on hardcore analysis. We'll do that next week. 54 over-under, that feels high. We've had a lot of high over-unders recently, and most notably last year, if you took the under on pretty much everything, you made out like a banshee. I mean, just crazy on the unders. 54 feels high, even for these two teams. However, I think this is interesting. So I think this really depends on your analysis and how you, and I realize I just said your analysis, and how you think this game is going to play out. Do you think San Francisco is going to win? Because if you think San Francisco is going to win, obviously you're taking them against the spread, You're taking the money line, and I think you're taking the over. Because if San Francisco is going to win, they got to put some points on the board. This is going to be one of those games like the game they beat New Orleans. It's going to be a monster of a game. If you think Kansas City is going to win, it could still be an under. Kansas City could go out and score 35 points and give up 10. You know, that could happen. I don't think that happens. It's probably more like 28 points, to be honest with you, and they give up 17, something like that. You know, that feels about right. They give up 20. That's pretty interesting. A game script like that be pretty likely. I don't think they put up 35, honestly, against that defense. But Mahomes can put up points against any defense. So anyway, point is this. If you think San Francisco is going to win, I think the over is very much in play. If you don't, then it becomes more tricky. I do think this feels like an under. I do think this feels like a Kansas City win that, again, not based on any hardcore analysis. We're just getting this all started here. But at least initial looks at projections has this extremely tight in my numbers, and the line looks about spot on. So anyway, that's where we stand with all of that. More to come on that front. But let's talk about Antonio Brown. What else can we freaking say at this point? Wow, another red flag. Is anybody, if you're a Rat Packer and you've been keeping track of the red flags, because for a while last year we were keeping track of the red flags, and I think I tapped out at about 8 red flags. How many are we at now? Because here's the report. This came from Cameron Wolf, who's over at ESPN. Hollywood, Florida police investigating Antonio Brown for possible battery. And then it got worse. I mean, this was related to something going on with moving truck workers. And now his trainer is involved. And to make matters worse, Antonio Brown is not talking to police. And he has locked himself inside his house. Wow. That's where we are right now, by the way. As of about noon Eastern on Wednesday. Wow. I mean, I just don't know what to say anymore. It's like when it can't seemingly get any worse, any weirder, it does both at the same time with the Antonio Brown saga. He's not going to play in the NFL ever again. He's not going to play in the NFL ever again. If you had dynasty shares, and well, hopefully you got rid of those soon, you know, before all of this, because man, they are not worth anything at this point. If you're hoping that he was going to come back, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So there you go. A lot of reports on the coaching front. We still have a lot of vacancies out there in terms of coordinators, etc., that will continue to put that map together. But it looks like the Jaguars are going to have an offensive coordinator, and his name is Jay Gruden. This is a little bit of a surprise, and I'll tell you why. Behind the scenes, I had heard that there would be a possibility if Jay got fired, and he did, that he would spend this next year with his brother. So that isn't going to happen. And I guess either one would have made sense if he goes elsewhere, because Jay Gruden has been an NFL head coach. And I don't think that window is entirely closed on him. I think he could be a head coach again at some point. But it wasn't a Ron Rivera situation, an Andy Reid situation, where you just jump from being a head coach to being a head coach elsewhere, obviously with Jay Gruden, because it doesn't quite have that level of success. However, pretty good offensive mind. Let's be honest. He made Andy Dalton for a while look a lot better than maybe he was. He made Kirk Cousins look pretty good as well. Does he do so in Jacksonville? Is it Gardner Minshew? We don't have the answer to that question just yet. Is Gardner Minshew a long-term answer for this team? Is he a short-term bridge answer? Or is he not the answer? Any one of those outcomes could be possible here in 2020. And it wouldn't surprise anybody if any of them happen, right? So we'll see. But I do think overall this is good for this team who, you know, really kind of struggled to reel it all in and put it all together. I think getting Jay's mind in there is going to help things. And some guys, let's face it, some guys, I've said this on this pod many times, some guys are better as coordinators than they are as head coaches. It's just the way it is. Not a knock on those guys. Not everybody is cut out to be an NFL head coach. There's a reason why there's only 32 of those jobs. Well, because there's 32 teams. But not everybody can be that leader of men or brilliant mind or both that requires to be a head coach. Speaking of not having that, Freddie Kitchens. I'm sorry. I kick when they're down. I'm sorry, Browns fans, but I know you're probably feeling the same way. But it does look like he's going to go to the Giants. He will not be the Giants offensive coordinator because that's audio there from the Giants offensive coordinator. It's Jason Garrett. So what is Freddie Kitchens? Would it make sense if he's a quarterback's coach? I think it does make sense, and he does have a connection to Joe Judge. They did work together at Mississippi State. So there's a connection there. And what I like about that, I'll tell you, and obviously, all right, Freddie Kitchens, we can make all the jokes that we want to make. He shouldn't have been hired as the head coach. He was hired as the head coach, and we saw he shouldn't have been hired as the head coach. Should he have been the offensive coordinator this year? Maybe. Possibly. That could have worked. But he shouldn't have been the head coach. But what I like about this, I'm not going to kick Kitchens entirely when he's down because he did have success in 2018 in his roles with the Browns that season because it changed a little bit, obviously, through the course of the season. And on top of that, he's one of Judge's guys. That's important, especially for Judge being thrust into this situation without having been a coordinator. You know, he, or offensive or defensive coordinator, obviously he had his role in the special teams, etc. But without having that, he's going to need a good surrounding cast, and he's going to need to be surrounded at least by some of his guys. It can't just be Judge now all of a sudden working with a whole bunch of guys he's never worked with before. So that's good for Judge. Will it be good for the Giants? Will it be good for Daniel Jones? Is Freddie Kitchens even going to be the quarterback's coach? We don't know yet, but we shall see. What we do know in Tennessee is that Dean Pease retired 12 years in the NFL, but 70 years old, so it took him a little while to get to the show. And once he got to the show, he proved that he was more than worthy of being there. Heck of a run from Dean Pease as an NFL defensive coordinator, and especially here in this recent stretch with the Tennessee Titans. You could argue, okay, Tennessee Titans, Derrick Henry was phenomenal down the stretch. Ryan Tannehill put the team on his back at points. AJ Brown showed that he can be a player that at times can potentially even take a game over as a rookie. But the most important factor in the success of the Tennessee Titans making that postseason run that nobody other than Titans fans and the Titans organization themselves thought they could make, it was Dean Pease. It was the defense. The defense was phenomenal. The defense went in and they did their job against the GOAT. Granted, it wasn't a great Patriots offense, so okay. But then they went in and they did their job against the most electric weapon in the NFL. Heck of a job, Tennessee Titans. Heck of a job, Dean Pease. Fond farewell. He's had some health issues here, so let's in recent seasons here. So let's hope this is a nice retirement for him, stepping away from the game of football. And we'll keep you updated on what the Tennessee Titans decide to do there. On the free agency front, because we're coming up on free agency, of course, we have our top 100 free agency ranker at PFF.com. It's not a fantasy tool per se, but as fantasy players, it's important to, you know, keep an eye on what's going on in terms of free agency. And we're going to do a lot there for fantasy purposes as well. But with free agency coming up, one of the top free agents out there, of course, is Dak Prescott. Well, Stephen Jones said extending him is the top priority this offseason. It's been widely speculated that, yes, this is going to happen in some way, shape, or form. Quarterbacks at Dak's age, coming off a season that Dak had, in regard, whatever you think about the team as a whole, you look at what Dak did this year, and he most definitely took a step forward. So guys like that at his age don't reach free agency unless something colossally bad happens, and I can't remember anything like that in recent memory. Maybe the most hyped recently would be Kirk Cousins in recent seasons, and that was a situation that was just handled poorly on Washington's front. To tag a guy 2 years in a row, I mean, whatever. Water under the bridge for us now. Dak's not going to reach free agency. Now, whether or not it's a long-term deal, I think that's the biggest question. I do think it's ultimately a long-term deal. It'd be foolish of the Cowboys to not do so. So expect Dak to get paid. Get him. He's definitely going to get paid. AJ Green in a very different situation. Now, over at PFF, we take a look at our rankings here for free agency. And right now, we have AJ Green at 11. Now, this is not a fantasy ranking. He's the number two wide receiver based on our rankings here in this free agency class. Only ahead of him is Amari Cooper, which makes a lot of sense because he's pretty young. 25 and a half years old. AJ Green, on the other hand, is 31 and a half years old. This will be his age 32 season. And for fantasy, I can't get too excited about it. But the word is from Zach Taylor that re-signing him is, quote, definitely a priority. I definitely don't buy when people use definitely. It's just one of those words that, you know, it's an unnecessary word in a lot of instances, and it's one of those that could be a little coach speaky in this instance. I don't know if they're going to end up paying him. We have in this, and this is what's cool about this free agency ranking thing. I know I'm talking about it, all right, but I like it, and I think you'll like it too, because it does have a projected contract number. So right now he's averaging $15 million a year, and our projected number would be 16.67. That's hefty. That's hefty. And this is all coming. We're using our friends over at Over the Cap as well for that information. That's hefty. I don't know, man. A guy who's on the decline. I mean, yeah, still playing good football. Like, you know, he was a number 11 wide receiver in PFF grades in 2018. Good football. But the injuries, man. The injuries. So we shall see there. Another interesting older player right now, Phillip Rivers. Jason Lockenfora, my friend over at CBS Sports, said that there's a lot of buzz about Tampa being a landing spot for him. And that would certainly throw everything out of whack, because if he goes there, he's a bridge. Wherever Rivers goes, he's a bridge quarterback. You can't expect to have Phillip Rivers for another half decade, right? You're looking at a window, and it's probably a two-year window, right? Certainly, no doubt in my mind can he be an NFL starter next year, but when does the decline ultimately happen? Because it'll happen quick for these players at quarterback when you get up in age. He's 38 years old right now. So that would be a throwing in of the towel on Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston then would go elsewhere, which, whoa, all of a sudden now everything gets, you know, completely bonkers. Completely bonkers if that happens, because then where does he go? And you figure, you know, folks would probably be clamoring for his services. Right now, we have Jameis Winston ranked 12th overall on our free agency list. Among quarterbacks, right now what we have is Drew Brees, Dak Prescott, Tom Brady, Rivers, Tannehill, and Jameis. So our numbers, you know, we're a little bit lower on him. That's for football purposes. But for fantasy purposes, you know, out of those guys, I mean, he's certainly higher on my list than Tom Brady. He's certainly higher on my list than Rivers and Tannehill. He's higher on my list maybe even than Dak Prescott. Possible. It's going to be close between him and Brees. Jameis put up 5,000-plus passing yards. I don't care that he threw 30 interceptions because he threw 30 touchdown passes. I don't care if it's ugly. That's one of the things about the fantasy mindset. You got to kind of just forget about some of the stuff that fans go crazy over. If it doesn't impact us, doesn't really matter. That'd be pretty fascinating. And so, you know, some folks have said, well, what about Jason Lockenfora? How reliable is the source or the buzz that he's receiving? I can see this. Jason works for CBS Sports. Bruce Arians used to work for CBS Sports. Not saying I know for a fact that he spoke to Arians or anything like that, because I have no freaking clue. But connecting the dots a little bit, I know that there's been interactions between those guys. I know there has. And, you know, that's not shocking because they were colleagues. So we'll see there. But that'd be crazy, because Indy is the most often rumored destination there for Rivers. And even that alone, that would have a ripple effect, because obviously there's going to be a new quarterback with the Chargers as well. It's going to get fun. Free agency, a lot of fun. Another quick one here about Derrick Henry. Hey, he's been asked about this, and of course, he just lost a playoff game, so it's tough. And a game that they could have won, they were up early. Of course, Kansas City. But hey, they gave him a run for their money. Anyway, he said, right now, we just lost the game. I'm not even thinking about no contracts or things like that. And that's a direct quote there from him. Cap room is interesting here. The cap space, they have over $60 million in cap space. I don't think it makes sense to spend on a guy like Henry, especially given where the market is set with Ezekiel Elliott's contract. But it could happen. If he's back in Tennessee, I still like him next year, although we do have to talk about his touchdowns performance this season in just a minute. But a couple other quick injury notes. Julian Edelman expected to be ready for the offseason workouts. He had shoulder surgery, help repair. That was one of the injuries he was going through this season. He's going to be, 34 next season? The decline is happening, man. Not a guy we're going to be targeting for fantasy purposes. Odell Beckham Jr., surgery, core muscle surgery. So he's 28. I'm not worried about that. I'm just worried about the offense as a whole. I think Beckham ends up being half a value, though, next year. So let's go dive into this research that I've been doing. What I've been looking at is expected production. So some of you may follow along with Scott Barrett. He uses expected production to calculate expected fantasy points. And really what it is, just a fancy way of saying, we look at all the historic data that we have at PFF. So it goes back to 2006. And then we pinpoint instances of a similar carry or similar target in the past. So a carry, you'd be looking at a few factors. You'd be looking at down and distance. You'd be looking at where the line of scrimmage is located, right? Those are the primary things there. For targets, you're looking at target depth, line of scrimmage, and of course, you're factoring positions as well. So when we look at carries, we're looking just at running back carries. Any running back who's ever had a carry at that down and distance and that line of scrimmage, right? And then what did they do with that carry? What's the average over the long term? And that average will give us an expectation for what a running back should do if he gets a carry in that exact same location, that same scenario, same down and distance, etc. Is it a perfect methodology? No, but it is giving us a pretty good snapshot of what we should expect in an average situation. And remember, the average is the important thing, because when we talk about regression, we're talking about a movement to the average, movement to the mean. That could be a positive or negative movement. I know people are going to tweet me, there's no such thing as positive. Regression doesn't mean positive. No, I'm not saying. What I'm saying is it moving to the mean. That could be upward or downward. If you way exceeded the mean, you move downward. If you've undershot the mean, you could move upward, right? That's all it means. So it's a really cool set of stats that we have at our disposal. And by the way, this is going to be at your disposal at PFF coming up in 2020 here. We're going to have a lot more of it on the site, so you'll be able to access it on your own. And if you want to get access now, we're having a special sale at PFF. A little, it's a tis the season for sales, right? You want to buy a TV right now? It's the best time of year to buy a TV. You want to get a subscription to PFF? It is actually the best time of year, one of them, to get a subscription to us. So this is this week only, the championship sale, 30% off. It's PFF30 is the promo code. 30% off an annual sub. That's pretty darn good right there. Anyway. I wanted to take a look specifically at touchdowns, because if you've listened to this pod, you know how touchdowns drive me nuts. They're overvalued. They are overvalued at 6 points. The example I have in the article that went up at PFF.com today, say we have a running back, has one carry from the 1 yard line and scores a touchdown. That running back has the same amount of fantasy points as a running back carries the ball 14 times for 61 yards and doesn't score. Which one of those two had the better game, or did they have an equal game? I don't think we can say that's an equal performances. Like, yes, the running back who scored the touchdown impacted his team on the scoreboard, but how much did he really impact his team? And he didn't move the chains, he didn't do anything like that. So they both in fantasy purposes, though, are equal. It's a bit of a problem. But the bigger problem with touchdowns isn't that. Okay, I know. Some people will disagree with me with that. You can't disagree with me here. Touchdowns, year over year, are very difficult to predict because there can be wild swings from one year to the next. And yet, a lot of folks are unaware of that, and they weight too heavily because they just look at fantasy points, last year's touchdown productivity. And for guys who have historically high, like outlier seasons, that can be a big problem. So I look through the history going back to the 2006 season. The biggest outlier season was LaDainian Tomlinson because he scored 28 freaking rushing touchdowns in 2006. That was and his expected was really high as well. His expected touchdowns based on similar touches throughout PFF's history here, the PFF era 2006 to 2020, is 13.8. That was massive. He had a differential of plus 14.2. So off the charts. And he did regress the next season to 15, which was still one of the highest seasons ever. Then after that, in 2008, he had 11. So he moved down more to a reasonable area. Some players can sustain it over two seasons, those outliers, but that is the exception, not the rule. And a lot of times we see seasons like D'Angelo Williams in 2008. If you remember that, it was awesome. D. Will had 18 rushing scores, but his expected amount was 7.5. So it's a differential of plus 10.5. The next season, you know how many touchdowns he scored? Seven rushing touchdowns. And what's fascinating there is, yes, he did miss a couple games, but it's not like he was out for the season or anything along those lines. What's fascinating, though, is what this caused, the effect on his draft status for fantasy purposes. So in 2009, he ended up being the number 5 player selected in drafts based on ADP. He finished as the 14th running back. So that was a negative return on investment. That was a fantasy disappointment. Not necessarily a fantasy bust, but a big time fantasy disappointment. The biggest swing that I saw based on expectation, LeSean McCoy 2011-2012. In 2011, he had 17 rushing scores. 17. The next season, he had 2. So in 2011, 17, expected touchdowns are 11.6. So he's still expected to have a lot. The following season, 2, and he played 12 games that year, but the expected number was pretty low, too. It was 5.1. So he went from being extremely efficient to pretty darn inefficient in the span of one season. That can happen with rushing touchdowns. So anyway, you want the rest of the numbers. I have the top 15 highest plus-minus differential in the article at PFF.com, but I wanted to look at this past season. And the guys with the highest differential. So the top on the board, Aaron Jones, plus 7.6 differential. Scored 16, as you know. His expected touchdown was 8.4. So he's up there. Derrick Henry, 16 rushing scores for him as well. 9.5 was his expected, so plus minus is 6.5. Those would be two of the biggest numbers that we've seen. Aaron Jones would come in as the number 4. And what's that? 5, 6, 7, doing the math on air here, would be number 7 for Derrick Henry, all time. Every one of those guys that we saw regressed the following season, the one exception being the outlier of these top guys, by the way. The one exception would be the outlier of LaDainian Tomlinson, who had the basically sustained two seasons worth of crazy production and then ultimately regressed. So, in other words, when we're looking at Aaron Jones and Derrick Henry for fantasy purposes, when we're evaluating for drafts coming up, we are going to have to factor this in. There's almost no way that these guys are this efficient next year as well. I can't say it won't, absolutely will not, no matter what happened, but I can say that there is a strong possibility it is not going to happen. Now, that being said, let's be clear that the expected touchdown number could still be, it could be higher for Aaron Jones if he gets more carries in high conversion spots, obviously closer to the end zone. Like, for example, Dalvin Cook, I mean, he had an expected touchdown number that was higher than Aaron Jones this year. It was 9.5. He scored 13 touchdowns, so he still was a little bit more efficient, but nowhere near as efficient as Aaron Jones, 16 and expected 8.4. The highest expected touchdown number this season was Christian McCaffrey, 10.8. He, of course, scored 15, so he even had a pretty high plus-minus differential, plus 4.2. And it's interesting, when you look back to McCaffrey last year, he had 7 rushing scores, and that was actually below his expected number. His expected number was 8.5 last year, so the writing was almost on the wall for McCaffrey to improve this season. Interesting stuff there. Anyway, going to point out one more player here on this list. So I give you the top 10 from this season. The player's name is Josh Allen. Josh Allen, over the last 2 years, has been off the charts efficient. He has 17 rushing touchdowns over the last 2 seasons. That's 6.9 more nice than the 10.1 he has expected. Now, 10.1 expected rushing touchdowns for a quarterback is still really freaking high, but you factor in the fantasy points. He scored 41.4 more fantasy points as a result of this extra efficiency, and it's prolonged. It's 2 seasons worth of off-the-charts efficiency. I think we have to expect some regression in Allen's fantasy points, at least his rushing fantasy points, heading up to 2020. So be careful. That's one of the big mistakes that I've seen folks make in the past when it comes to quarterback evaluation. If they have an outlier season, whether it is for passing touchdowns or especially rushing touchdowns, that's the big one, rushing touchdowns. There's an outlier season, or two in this case, then sometimes we value these guys higher than they should be valued. And I think that's going to be the case with Josh Allen. Anyway, this is just the start. This is a fun stat. There's a lot of interesting insight from this stat, but this is just the start of things. Tomorrow I'm going to release some work on receiving touchdowns, and I think receiving touchdowns are actually even more insightful than rushing touchdowns. So I'll talk a little bit about that on Friday's pod, and we'll continue to take a look at stuff for the Super Bowl, and yeah, we'll talk a little tiny bit about the Pro Bowl. But anyway, in the meantime, do me a favor, head on over to PFF.com and take advantage of this sale. 30% off. It's a good sale. PFF 30 gets you 30% off on an Edge or Elite subscription. Great, great, great deal right there. At Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter and Instagram. Hit me up anytime there. Otherwise, I'll catch you on the flip side for another edition of the pod. For PFF, I'm Jeff Ratcliffe, and I'm out of here. We'll be right back.